He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And as we head towards holidays, driving is becoming a bigger congestion issue almost on a daily basis on many of the roads. And Jay Buck is going to take over at this point and discuss a interesting round trip event that he took recently to, I don't know, South Carolina or somewhere and back. Jay?
Yeah, so good morning, everybody. My partner and I drove a Ford Transit Connect van from here in Lakeville to Sea Island, Georgia, about a 980-mile trek. And we were on a mission to deliver something and made the trip in a day and a half all the way down I-95 and in one shot back from Georgia back home. And it's just confirming what I've said over the last few weeks. The traffic on the roads is just absolutely insane. And I-95 has always been an interesting route to travel at any one time. Obviously, very congested here in the Northeast. You know, the Boston, New York, Baltimore, D.C. corridor, well, actually all the way up to Richmond, Virginia. Takes a little planning. We were just lucky that we hit all the times right, both on the way down and on the way back up. If you don't, you can hit major congestion around, more specifically around D.C., but any one of the metro areas. Just interesting.
Jay, I just want to interject for the listeners. Was this a midweek trip or a weekend trip?
Midweek. It doesn't matter. I-95... Okay. We came back in the night of Thursday to Friday and got to the George Washington Bridge following Google Maps. And it took us on a detour just before getting to the GW. And it, kind of a new way, actually, new way to me. And it just shoots you, takes a little detour, go over I don't know what bridge, and brings you into Fort Lee right before you get on the George Washington Bridge. And you could see that line of traffic that went all the way down on the New Jersey side. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and traffic was at a gridlock. There was nothing moving to get on the George Washington Bridge. It was just crazy. And that, you know, that was just New York. And, you know, being from around here, we obviously know that the traffic situation around New York more than anywhere else. But it was just general traffic all over the place. You know, we keep saying, you know, trucking companies are, I'm going from one thing to another here, trucking companies are hiring drivers, we can't move goods fast enough, we have all these logistics problems. Even if you find more trucks and more drivers, I don't know where you're going to put the trucks, because at night, there is just nowhere to park trucks all up and down I-95. They are literally parking on the side of the highway now, not only in parking lot and rest areas, in on and off ramps, but now they just park just on the side of the road. There's just nowhere to put all these trucks.
This is for a rest period for the drivers, I take it, Jay, correct?
Yes, yep, yep. So, anyway, very interesting. You know, traffic moves faster down south. The speed limits are, once you get into North Carolina, the speed limits go up to 70 miles an hour, and you have nice three-lane highways in North Carolina, you know, most of the way, but South Carolina is still mostly two-lane highway. I-95 through South Carolina, yes, is a two-lane highway. And, you know, even though traffic moves at 80 miles an hour, you know, when a truck pulls into the left lane, and they usually park it there for quite some time, you know, the line gets long. And invariably, you see crashes up and down I-95. I mean, I've never gone up I-95 and not seen something happen with some major backup along the way. So, like you said, going into this holiday period, I think, you know, if you have to get on the road, think about when you're going to get on. You know, again, as I always say, keep your eyes peeled, because it's going to be it's going to be heavy traffic all week, is my hunch.
No fuel shortages were observed by you or anybody.
No, so, you know, I always think of Georgia being one of the cheapest places to buy gas. And, you know, with prices of gas hovering around $3.50 around here for regular gas, the cheapest gas I saw along the road was somewhere in North Carolina at exactly $2.90, and we missed it. Otherwise, the cheapest gas, both I'd say North Carolina, then went up a little bit in South Carolina, and in Georgia was around $3.10, $3.15, somewhere along those lines.
Now, for the listeners, where you talk generally cheapest gas, we're always referring to 87 octane. Many of the cars that are on the road today, the newer cars, either mandate premium, which is 91, why we don't have 91, we have 93. 89 may or may not be a suitable alternative, but the price above the regular grade fuel up around here is often 50 to 70 cents a gallon higher than the regular grades you're talking about on this particular venture and just observing prices along your way.
Okay, and just let's go back for one quick second. What was back in the day? It's like last year. What was gas in North Carolina, for example, or in Georgia, Jay?
I don't know. This was my first over the road trip in probably 2 years. You know,
okay.
Since pre pandemic, and I just remember 20 years ago seeing gas and being wowed at 75 cents a gallon in Georgia, and being all happy to fill up only to find gas cheaper yet, you know, 5 miles down the road. But that was when we were, maybe in the 120s around here. I'm talking 20 years ago. So I really don't know what the prices of gas were then versus now.
Okay. And we can't do much about getting it back then at the moment. We have places here for our listeners, small stations in small towns are bumping up to $4 a gallon for regular grade. There's a place just before you get on 684 South off 22, a Shell station, has been at $3.99 a gallon for regular for weeks. There's one in Pound Ridge, New York, a mobile station. Regular grade is at $3.99 a gallon. And the premium price was like $4.50 at one of the stations. So we're going to be in for, I think, fairly high prices relative to what they're telling us we only paid only a year ago or maybe 18 months ago, half a dollar or more above what we used to pay. And it's not going down, at least right now.
Yeah. Would you like my opinion about that?
I don't know. And if the listeners would like to hear it, go ahead.
Ridiculous.
Well, it is ridiculous, but we can't do anything about it. So
I
sorry, listeners.
I dispute that, but okay. Fair enough. And does someone want to do the 10 best?
The 10 best cars, according to Car and Driver, every year since, I don't know how long they've been doing this, 30 years or so. Robin, I presume you saw that and read a little through that.
Yes, and the same ones keep sticking up in the top five. You know, a few Asian makes, Honda and the like. And go ahead, Jay.
Well, actually, I thought it was interesting because one car that did not make it this year that has made it for most of the last 20 years is the BMW 3 Series. And the BMW 3 Series has historically been a small, fairly compact sports sedan. And it has grown, and I don't want to feed into what Robin is going to jump into this conversation as soon as I mention this. It has grown and grown and grown. It's heavy. It's not that sporty looking, and the demographics of people driving them certainly are not sporty. And I think it's lost its way somewhere along the way. Anyway, the BMW 3 Series does not make the list. What does make the list is the Honda Accord, which is a mainstream do everything well sedan, and the Honda Accord has been on the list for years.
Yes.
The Golf GTI makes it, and we know there's a new Golf GTI. The MK8 is out this year. And it is the only Golf we'll be getting for some time anyway. Chevy, GM has a few cars on the list with two Cadillacs and the new Corvette, the mid-engine Corvette, which actually gets great reviews. It's like a supercar for under $100,000, which is
remarkable.
It's always been the selling point of the Chevy Corvette is it's the best bang for the buck in sports cars. What else makes the list? The Ram truck with an interesting comment that with the Eco Diesel V6, the mileage you get with a Ram pickup truck is better than with a Kia Telluride SUV, full-size SUV, which, by the way, also makes the list, and which, you know, according to a lot of people, is pretty much the best all-around utility vehicle SUV you can buy today on the market.
I want to just jump in on these sort of these 10 best lists. I don't have any clue how this affects who buys what in the car industry or the truck industry. I've been trying to... I've watched the Honda main this list for decades. I have never basically wanted to buy one because I don't either the style, or design, size, or I'm just not a Honda person. But they are ultra-reliable. There's nothing against this 10 best list being there for a reason, but I'm not sure the reason gets them a lot of sales more than they would anyway. I want to move if Jay...
Well, are you still with this, Jay, or not? One last thing about the 10 best is there not only is not a single electric car on the list, there is a long list of contenders that did not make the 10 best and maybe another 20, 30 cars or so. And there's not a single electric vehicle on that list either. So,
interesting.
You know, whether I just find it hard to believe that you can be totally objective and not include a single electric car on the list. But hey,
well, I am too. I poll many Tesla users, for example, and I ask just you know everyone I talk to about a Tesla, if they don't adore it, they love it. I don't know whether there's much difference between adore and love, but I have also found very few people have told me that they've had any mechanical failures that have caused them to have a nuisance repair problem with their Teslas. And so I don't know what makes these 10 best things. I do not know what they're based on. I don't know whether they're based more on electronics and fewer electronic issues, such as touch screens and all that, or whether it's a mechanical or a combination.
It's not a Consumer Report type.
No, it is not. That's
review.
Correct.
It is really
the voter.
You know, it's
type.
About the car specs, the pricing, there is a pricing criteria, and I forget what it is. I think it's $100,000, $80,000. So there is a pricing criteria, and then it's just you know it's testing the cars and a bunch of editors just. Voting on what they like.
Yes, and it's very subjective, I think. But I want to move to chip situations because we've talked a lot about the chip problems and they're going to continue, but there's been a return to some production normalcy in recent days, if not a couple of weeks, with the prognosis for production comebacks being fairly good for some makers of vehicles. However, GM just announced over the weekend that they are going to have to stop allowing people, well, they're not going to permit people to get heated seats and heated steering wheels on the lower levels of many of their vehicle lines, including trucks and cars, just as we're going into winter in a major part of this country. It's just apparently the chips that control heated seats and wheels are separate from some of the other chips because the manufacturer that supplied General Motors in this case, and not Ford, I guess, because Ford says they don't have the same problem developing, has said they cannot get chips that allow these vehicles to have the heated steering wheels and heated seat options produced for the next several months. And this is on 2022 line vehicles, model line vehicles. So I guess the 21s, if they were pre-ordered and pre-built, will have them for their owners. But as the article I read says, once you've had heated seats, and in many cases heated wheels, as something on your vehicle, you never want to be without them again. So this is another one of these little glitches that comes along at an inopportune time of the season, when people who want to go and order 2022 vehicles in the General Motors lineups are going to find themselves met by salespeople that they will not be able to get their cars delivered with these options in.
Hold on for a second.
General Motors says they're going to be able to allow them to be retrofitted in 2022 for the vehicles that don't get them. They're going to keep them available in the top-of-the-line Denali versions for the trucks, for example.
There we go.
And the Cadillacs and the upper lines of all their stuff. So you're either going to upgrade your order to the top of the line and therefore top of the expensiveness of the vehicles, or you're going to have to get your vehicles maybe without them on there, and you may have cold seats and cold hands for the coming season until you get retrofitted. Steering wheels will not be able to be retrofitted, just the seats.
You've just answered my question. Obviously, if you can get them on the more expensive trim lines of a particular model, obviously, you can still get your heated seats and steering wheel. It's just going to cost you a heck of a lot.
Well, it's a numerical problem in the chips that are there. You know, these manufacturers that are having chip problems have been, as we know, they've been trying to produce pickup trucks throughout the chip shortage and upper levels of their vehicles because they're the more profitable vehicles to make them.
And yet car manufacturers and dealers are making record profits.
That's true. And they're doing it in another way, probably because you're not being able to get your vehicles discounted off MSRPs where you used to be because of the limitations and whatever else is going on to make you want to grab whatever you can get at whatever cost it takes to get that vehicle.
So adding $1,000, $2,000, or $10,000 to an MSRP, is that gouging or is that just the way...
I think that's economic. Well, adding above the MSRP is gouging, in my view. There's a discussion going on right now about Bronco First Editions. There's a dealer somewhere in Connecticut that's got a red Bronco hardtop, and he's asking, it's one of the first, I guess there were 50 of them were numbered. I'm not sure what that means, but 50 of them had numbers on their dashes. And this dealer has one. And he's asking apparently $100,000 even, or maybe a little more dollars for this red Bronco first edition vehicle that he apparently has on his lot and is waiting for somebody to grab it at that price. Now, that is gouging.
Can't fix stupid. Somebody buys it.
Well, people have money. You know this goes on all the time. Our listeners probably know that who are really following that kind of part of the story. Rare editions come out, and people pay, in my opinion, stupid prices for them. If they've got that money, they probably can afford to buy it at whatever price they want to pay, and they still have a lot of money left over to do whatever else they want to do with the rest of their lot. So I guess that's what you get for when you're, you know, very rich, very wealthy. You get that option to do what you want with that money.
Well...
But I can tell you that the $100,000 Bronco is not going to run any better than the MSRP of the same version of it, which is maybe somewhere in the 60s for this particular model. I don't know what the MSRP is.
I just have to say this is an interesting economic argument that we could spend hours on.
Yes, and we don't want to do that.
Okay.
So move on.
All right. What would you like to move on to?
Safety
tips. 5 minutes left. 5 minutes.
Well... We've gone over the safety tips. I'm not sure there are a lot of new safety tips. All we can do is just emphasize concentration is very much an important factor of what drivers should be doing with their minds when they're driving vehicles. Jay brought it up in his opening discussion about his round trip.
So, let me go back to that and say, okay. Of course, you know, in all the driving we did, we drove quite a bit in the early evening or through bad weather, where 90% of the people have their lights on, as they should, and then there is always a bunch of people either driving older vehicles that do not have daytime running lights, or people who are driving Toyotas and Fords primarily, where there are no daytime running lights. I think Toyota, you can program your lights to have daytime running lights. But in the case of Ford, you cannot buy a Ford today with daytime running lights. When I drive my Ford, my little Ford Transit Connect van, I have the lights on all the time. That means that when I'm driving during the day, my rear lights are on. Kind of ridiculous, but better than having no lights at all when everybody else has lights.
Jay, I want to continue this for our listeners because there are listeners that think that they can rely, and they may not even know it, on their DRLs, daytime running lights, to act as headlights as we go into the dusk hours. And when DRLs are on, you are correct. You didn't say it, but what I heard was that rear tail lights are not lit up. And that is true. And let me tell you, when you're in a line of cars, you're facing a line of cars coming at you, many with their headlights on at all, and some were not. You cannot see the car that's in the mix of those cars if their lights are completely off. And it is a dangerous situation. I don't know, and there many of them are modern cars. Some of them
so
can turn
o'clock,
your DRLs off. The
1
Jeeps,
o'clock
cannot.
In the morning, we're going through New York after getting over the GW, and we're following an NYPD car, a Ford Explorer, with no taillights on.
Right.
Because going on daytime running lights, what do? Flash the cop?
I don't know. Well, you can't. Flashing cars with DRLs on and no taillights doesn't do any good because the people don't know why you're flashing them.
I'm going to just interject and say half the time people don't know why you're flashing them anyway, which is just really frustrating.
Well, okay.
No, I don't know, Jay. I'm sure that was a rhetorical question because you don't flash a cop.
Yeah.
So, but it's more indication that it's a totally prevalent problem and that the best thing anyone can do is be alert and, you know, because if you're not, you're going to smash into the car.
I will say to the listeners, DRLs are not a substitute for your headlights on when they should be on because you get your headlights on, you get your taillights on. And visibility, your visibility is very important to oncoming traffic.
Most modern cars have an auto setting for your lights. And
correct.
If you put it on auto, you should be fine 99.9% of the time, and that is the way to go. Put
right.
it on auto, never think about your lights.
And
again.
Auto includes automatic use of the DRLs during the daylight and presumably converting it to the headlights and therefore
correct.
Taillights as it gets dark enough for those to be desired to be operating properly so that you can be seen. Because you can't see some of these vehicles without lights on, and it's amazing how invisible they are, especially when you're in a line of cars, many with the lights on. Check your tire pressures also. My low-pressure light came on in a Jeep the other morning. It was 28 degrees. My temperatures turned out to be below 30 pounds per square inch in all four tires, and so the indicator on the Jeep said inflate to 36 pounds. Well, I wouldn't want to inflate at 36 pounds at 28 degrees because then it goes back up to 50 degrees and you're going to be up to 40 to 41 or 2 pounds and the ride's going to get harder. But low tire pressure can breed excess wear. It can cause other problems which you might not want to experience. But so when the temperatures go down and stay down, you should probably inflate your tires to a minimum of 32 to 34 pounds per square inch at those low temperatures and try to maintain them through the wintertime at that level or higher, remembering that once the temperatures start going back up to 70 degrees, if you're still at those levels, cold levels, you're going to have them above the recommended levels when it's hot again next year.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.